you heard what Peter was saying about the suppression, and we talked about briefly the energy device suppression. So we're gonna dive into this area, and maybe we'll have some of these inventors on talking about why they made what they did. And it might be difficult because, you know, some of these inventors, they're not known to be people friendly. So it'll be interesting. We got to wrap it up. In other news, I'm Jeff Brady. Thank you so much for supporting this station.
And this is WBAI New York, 12 midnight. And with any luck at all, you're going to be listening to a pre-recorded episode of Night Shift, although I don't have a great deal of faith that Weed Transfer is working properly, or that we're actually going to hear the program, as it's been said to me through the miracle, or should I say the mackerel, of technology. But we're just going to line them up and click it off and pray to Christ's bowels that this works. This is, as I say, WBAI New York, the fun-loving, fundraising radio station.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, and this is Night Shift. Have a special episode of Night Shift tonight. I've got some very, very special interviews for you. First, we have an interview with Steve Jablonsky, who is the composer for the new film Transformers Age of Extinction. He's been the composer for all the Transformers films. You may know him from scores he's done from everything from Gangster Squad to Desperate Housewives to a ton of things. You should look him up. He's a really, really good composer. So I talked to him about his process, about scoring, about working with Michael Bay, and a whole bunch of other interesting things. Then I also got a chance to work with Oscar-winning writer, director, actor, producer, Rob Reiner. That's right, Meathead. And he's got a new movie coming out this Friday with Michael Douglas and Diane Keaton. That movie is called And So It Goes. I had a chance to sit down with him at a junket here in New York a couple weeks ago, and I have an interview with Rob Reiner for you. Then I've got some other surprises. Some old Night Shift, some new Night Shift, some more movie soundtracks, of course some DGM, and a whole bunch of things. So please, stay tuned to Night Shift. We're in our marathon, so if you do like Night Shift, you should become a BAI buddy. You can go directly to our website at WBAI.org. Next week, I'll be back here with some DGM for you, so you're actually getting a break today, but please support WBAI, support listener-sponsored radio, support free speech radio, WBAI.org.
All right, YouTube for listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm talking with Steve Jablonski, who is the composer, among many other things, of Transformers Age of Extinction. Steve, welcome to WBAI.
Thanks, Mike.
So my first question to you is, when did you first know that music was what you were going to do with your life?
That's a good question. It wasn't until a bit later than you might think. I've always loved music. I listened to film scores when I was very young. I owned the Star Wars John Williams, you know, vinyl with Darth Vader on the cover when I was 8. But not until I got to college did I kind of realize that I wanted to try to do it for a living, because I actually went to school for computer science. I went to Berkeley, UC Berkeley, Northern California. And after a year of studying that, I just thought, I found it very boring, and there were so many people around me who were so much better at it than me, and so much more excited about it. And I was just far more interested in music, so I switched my major and dance, but it seems to have paid off.
Tell me a little bit about your path to music, because I know that you kind of came out of what's now almost being referred to as a school of composers who learned and work with Hans Zimmer. Can you tell me a little bit about the path to that?
Yeah, sure. When I got out of college, I didn't think I'm going to be a film composer. I thought maybe I would be air, because I had some technical background as well as music, because I never really studied film scoring. And so I got back to L.A. from college. I was a huge fan of Zimmer's for years and just found his number in a directory, his studio number, called over there, cold called.
And wow.
Do you guys need an intern or anybody to get people coffee or anything like that? And that was 1996, I believe, and it was a good time for me to do that, because at the time Zimmer's studio was very small. Him and a few people, and the studio manager said, yeah, come on over. So I came over and I got a job there just doing whatever they needed to do. Well, I got exposed to After a few months of interning, I started working with a composer named Harry Gregson-Williams, very accomplished guy, and he just moved out from London. So it was good timing there as well. He needed an assistant, and so he hired me on, and it snowballed from there. I was doing a lot of technical stuff for him, all for his studio, but I saw that I was interested in writing, so he would let me, when he wasn't in the studio, I would go in late at night and just mess around. And he slowly started letting me write for his films, you know, a little cue here and there. And Zimmer took notice of what I was doing, and I graduated on to writing for Zimmer's films. And it was that, you used the word school, which is very accurate. Like, I couldn't have learned that anywhere else. You know, I got to see Hans sitting with people like Ridley Scott or, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer and Michael Bay, of course, and just to sit and watch them interact. It's, you know, you don't learn that in school. So it was part of the reason now where I can work on these big blockbusters and not completely freak out.
I understand. With film scoring, there's a language to movie music in that certain things represent tension or action, maybe pizzicato strings or things like that. But one of the things that I've noticed about you is it seems like you refuse to be pigeonholed, but also sometimes you seem to turn that language maybe on its ear. Is that something you do intentionally?
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I don't really set out to do anything too intentionally. Like, I learned early on that I just go off of my feeling when I'm watching a scene or watching a movie or talking to a director. If I overthink it, then it generally doesn't work out so well. So I just go off of my gut feeling and just mess around, basically, until something feels right. And add to that, a lot of the filmmakers that I've worked with, they like that kind of different approach. They like to hear a sound that they've never heard before. I've heard that many times. Well, I'll take a pizzicato string or something like that and put it in my computer and process it so that you wouldn't know what it was necessarily. And directors have said to me in instances like that, they'll say, wow, that's cool. What is that? I've never heard that before. And a lot of them like that. That happens to be the way the people that I I've worked with, a lot of them are interested in different sounds, but you know, they think it gives their movie a special voice that people may not have heard before.
Well, I think that that's true, and I can tell you, as a movie soundtrack aficionado, it's refreshing to see, let's say, in the case of Transformers, what you might expect in a scene not necessarily be what you expect in a scene, but at the same time, if it's fighting robots, let's say, there is something about it that's epic, but at the same time, something mechanical. Tell me a little bit about the challenge of doing a film like this.
Cool. There are many challenges. It's just, the biggest, I guess, is that it's so large as far as just the scope of it and the number. number of minutes of music that need to be written. And the fact that, like when I start a project like this, I try to start early on because there's so much work to do. So I started in late December, I think, of last year. And at that point, there's really nothing to look at as far as robots go. It's a lot of blank plates, they call them, where it's, Michael would film and go and fill that in with all of these fighting robots. But when I start, there are no robots. It's just a nice sweeping pan of a city or a landscape or something. So it's very peaceful when, in fact, what's going to be happening there is a raging battle scene. So that's a fairly big challenge. So my approach is usually to just write pieces of music, not to picture, because there's no picture really to work to yet, and send them to Michael Bay and just, get his reaction to see if it's the right feel, because we talk a lot about feel. And for him, it's all about the emotion. So I try to write pieces that are emotional, but, not too on the nose or too over the top. And I just get a sense of what he's responding to. And then slowly I'll start to get scenes with some images to look at. And so it's kind of a slow evolution, which I think is good, because it's rather than if I waited till the end when there was an actual film that I could watch with all the images in place, I would never finish, because it's just so late in the game.
I understand. Well, it's interesting. So are you saying that to a certain extent you'll go with what the feeling or the texture you want to go, and then you augment as images come in?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And what I like about Bay and my method is that he will take the pieces that I write, and as he's editing the film, he will cut them in himself to spots, and then he'll send them to me and say, look, what do you think of this? And it's often a spot that I never thought of for that particular piece of music. It's happened so many times where he'll take a piece, put it somewhere completely different, and I think, oh, that's great. And then I take it and run with it and augment it, like you say, and make it fit to the scene a bit more closely. So it's, I think that, and Bay seems to like this approach. He likes to just sit and listen to pieces of music to get a feel for it and just get used to it and kind of listen to it for a couple weeks. So it's, like I said, it's an evolution on his films, because we have, we like to take our time.
Well, that's interesting. Now, let me ask you, especially in a film like Transformers, one of the aspects of the film, part of the sound design, the actual sound effects are at times going to either compete with or ideally, complement what you're doing. How much of that are you aware of, or how much of that, influences how you adjust or augment what you do?
Right. That's a good question. Because Michael uses the same people for every film, usually, it works out good for me, because I know the sound effects guys really well. And there's these two guys, Ethan and Eric, who are genius guys. I don't know how they create this stuff, but and they're very musical. So we communicate as much as we can, and I try to send them music as I'm writing it, send them music cues that they can look at. And I always like to cite one example in the part three. I sent them a cue that I had written, which it was a scene where some helicopters were going overhead. And they said the next version of picture I got had my music in the scene, and it had the sound effects in. And I noticed that the helicopter blades, the chopper blades, were timed perfectly to my music, to the rhythm of my music.
Oh, wow.
And I called them, and I said, you guys did that on purpose, right? I had to thank them. And they said, yeah, we did. So, and they'll pitch things so that they're in key with my music. And so it's a really great, collaborative situation where they're not going, we are the sound effects guys. We're going to squash the music with our amazing sounds. They're totally into working together and making the experience as good as it can be. Because if we're clashing constantly, it's going to be hell for the audience to sit and listen to that for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, or 2 hours and 45 in the case of Transformers.
No,
Well, you know, that's actually pretty fascinating. Now, I'm curious, considering that you, and most maybe of my listening audience may know you more for the work you did on Desperate Housewives, how has doing episodic television and, you know, having to come up with, you know, music quickly, and each episode may have different thematic things going on, how has that experience maybe influenced or helped or augmented, as we're using this word, what you do in film?
I look at them as quite different. I'm not sure one has affected the other consciously. If it has, I haven't realized it. But TV is such a regular thing. It's like every week, you know, you have 5 days to write this much music, and you sit down on Monday or whatever day and talk to the producers and say, okay, what do we do with this episode? And we discuss it. And then I go back to my studio, write. Record the strings, mix it, send it, and then do it again. And I had fun, don't get me wrong, doing Desperate Housewives, but a lot of fun. But I prefer the kind of long form that you have with films, where, like, Desperate Housewives was kind of an 8-year long film, if you think about it. You're like, it's kind of developing like a film would, but just over a much longer period of time. And just in pieces, which are the episodes. So it was hard. It's in a way, it's hard to see the scope of the whole picture because you don't know what's coming next week or next season or if there's going to be a next season. So my mind works a little differently when I'm. It's more immediate. Like I just have to look at this scene, do it, move to the next scene, do it, and send it to the producer. Get their notes. Just because there's just so little time on TV, it's shocking how little time there is sometimes. But it was a great experience. I have recently been shying away from TV a bit, just because I know how demanding it is, and I don't want to shortchange them when I'm on movies. So I've been focusing a bit more on movies. But if the opportunity arose, I would. Series, like I lucked out with Desperate Housewives. I mean, that was a unique thing to be involved in.
Sure. Well, now let me ask you another question. Looking at your career and what you've done, one of the pitfalls of being a composer is that if you do something that's successful, then you become that guy. If you do this genre and that's successful, then you become that guy. But you seem to somehow, you know, buck that. How are you able to do this?
Thank you for that as well. That's funny. From my perspective, I do feel like I am still kind of the action guy. And that's probably because obviously you wouldn't know what goes on behind the scenes. Like you wouldn't know that I've, you know, tried to get some smaller, more, story driven or just very simple films that, and they look at me and go, oh, you, the guy who did Transformers, really, huh? And those are harder for me to get, just strictly because I'm known for the complete opposite of that. And don't get me wrong, I have a blast doing what I'm doing, these big budget things, but I think a part of me would like to try something different, you know, something without car chases, which was, you know, Desperate Housewives was great for that, but there haven't been that many Desperate Housewives instances in my career. But hey, if I'm spend the rest of my days doing big action movies, I can't complain. But the occasional simple story with no gunfire would be nice.
No gunfire, okay. Well, speaking of gunfire, it's interesting because the type of music that, I mean, though you may say you're the action guy, I find, again, and I actually do listen to these scores, you know, outside of the film, the kind of music that you did, let's say, for Gangster Squad, which was a little more period-based, versus what you do for Ender's Game, versus what you did for Lone Survivor, there's a lot of diversity there, and it seems that you enjoy being able to use different instrumentation to maybe even create the same effect. Is this true, or is this in my imagination?
No, you hit the nail right on the head. It keeps it interesting for me, and I love going into a new thing like Gangster Squad, for example. I was really excited to do that. Or Ender's Game. While there are action scenes in both, obviously they're quite different still than anything I had done. So that's a cute observation of yours, that I really approached them as brand new things, and really was excited to see what kind of new thing I could do with Gangster Squad. I sat down with Ruben, the director, and looked through the film, and I thought he did such a cool visual thing, take on that kind of gangster era film. And so I tried to pay a little bit of homage to some of those rhythms and instruments, but try to do something new with it, because Ruben's a young guy, and similar to what I said earlier about directors wanting kind of cool new sounds, that's one good example where I took a lot of period instruments and just warped them in my system, processed them and distorted them or whatever, and Ruben was really responding to that, so I think that's where where that score came from. But you're right, I can do action film. I can do 10 different action movies, and each one can be different. And I think that part of it is me just wanting to make it more interesting for myself.
I love the music that you did for Steam Boy, which I thought was very unique and very different than what you'd done before. And I'm curious where that came from. Was it just working with Otomo, or, you know, knowing what his sensibilities were, or was it just because of the nature of the film, you just felt, let me change my palette completely?
That was one of the more unique jobs I've done, because they sent me the film. When I got the project, they sent me the film, and I hadn't actually had much discussion with Otomo at all. He sent his audio director out, this great guy named Kay, who came out, and we talked about the movie, and they wanted, all they said to me was they hired me because they want the big Hollywood sound, and that was my direction. And when they sent me the film to start looking at themes and things, it had no sound at all. No, there was no temp music, which was great. There were no sound effects, which was a little strange. And the only thing I had to reference was the dialogue track, which was in Japanese, so I had to have my script next to me. But the images were so great that I just let them inspire me, and that's where the score came from, really. There were no specific direction other than, quote, big Hollywood sound. And the film takes place in late 1800s, so it was, I know, I tried to steer away from too many electronics and just went more with organic acoustic sounds and big orchestral sounds.
Well, it gave the film a lot of sweep and scope, I felt.
Oh, great. Well, thanks. Yeah, that was really fun. I'd like to do another one like that.
Well, you know, I have to say, you first came to my attention. I did a CD giveaway for this movie you did called The Island. Now, I was not such a fan of the film, but I loved the score.
That I'm scared of heights, of visions of paradise, of visions with parasites, and my inner life, dreaming of fantasy, yet dreaming about life. So many yeses and not enough questions and stress. It's like cancer that's eating my soul for breakfast. Awake. They grin, but I scream because the smiles are fake. I see it all through a haze. It's light with no sun ray. No sun ray.
did that relationship come together? How did you get chosen for that? And what was it that you had done maybe that they said, hey, this is the guy for the island?
Right. Well, that came out of the remake that I did for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in 2003, I think it was.
Ah, that Bay produced.
He produced, yeah. That was the first film produced by his Platinum Dunes production company that has since made, you know, a ton of horror films and remakes. But just before that, I had worked a lot on Pearl Harbor, which Zimmer was the composer on. But I worked quite a bit on that one. And some of the people involved took notice. And when Texas Chainsaw Massacre came up and Platinum Dunes started up, then they said, we need a guy to do our first film here. My name came up, and they just kind of gave it to me. It was very,
nice.
It was frightening to me because it was sort of my first studio film, and it was produced by Bay. Very low budget, but I was so excited to do it because I loved the original film. I knew the original very well, and they just kind of offered it to me because of my work on Pearl Harbor and Armageddon, all these other films that I had helped on, but I wasn't the official composer. And I did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I remember to this day, Bay, at the final playback, looking at me going, man, we paid you nothing, and you did an amazing job. Thanks a lot. It was really great. He was really appreciative, and next thing I knew, they were offering me the island, which was just after that. And so, had I not done Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or had I messed it up, I guess I should say, may not have done that, because Bay, he's a very loyal guy, and he really appreciated the work I'd done for very little money.
And that you treated it as if it was the biggest paying job in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to me it was. To me, I just had to nail it and give it everything I had, and for him to trust me with the island, I knew it was huge, so I was terrified, but I took it very seriously and tried to do something cool. It was a really interesting film.
Definitely. Well, I like that. I liked what you did with Pain and Gain, too. That was a very unique score. And I know that was done fairly quickly in between, like, two other big films he was doing. Did you have much time, and how did you work on that versus how you got to work on Transformers?
That, it was relatively quick, but that one, because there are no big robots running around, it was in fairly good shape when I started. So there was a film for me to look at, and Bay said right up, you know, I don't want any orchestral cues, I just want it all electronic cool. And so I just really started writing pieces of music, because the way it's structured, it's, the music is just constantly changing. It's,
yes, yes.
Yeah, it's not particularly scored. It's more like needle drop pieces here and there. Like, mm-hmm. The score is kind of songs, but so I just wrote, I don't even know how many pieces I wrote, and they would cut them around. And I scored the opening, which is, you know, it's slow-mo Mark running from the mm-hmm. cops. And mm-hmm. there was a handful of scenes that I actually did score, but for the most part, I just wrote a ton of music that Bay cut in where he saw fit, which was cool. It was a fun way to do it. It was new for us. And to do it 100% electronic was also fun. And because it takes out the step of having to orchestrate and copy the music onto paper and do the session, you know, which is great fun. But
sure. Well, now there's software that'll write the music for you.
I gotta get that. What is that?
I have to tell you, I have it on my computer. I can tell you what it is, but it's like you could write whatever you want, and then it'll write it out like in score form.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
So
okay, that I do know. That's it. The software does make it really easy.
Yeah. Now, well, now let me ask you another question. You know, one of the things that I enjoyed about that, and even though you say you didn't. You know, you don't see yourself as being that diverse, but, you know, doing films like Your Highness and things like that, those are not films that you go, oh, okay, yeah, Transformers, and then Your Highness. But for you, and you mentioned there you'd like to do more, you know, story-driven films. Are there some musical things that you have yet to do, just maybe even outside of soundtracks, that you would like to do?
You know, people have asked me that. Have I ever considered just writing music, not for any film, just for myself or for a CD or something? And I have thought about it. It's just that my schedule has not permitted such a thing, which is, you know.
That's a good thing. Yeah, you can't complain about that, right.
But now that it's funny, you keep mentioning these films, and I go, oh, yeah, I mean, I have been able to. So I just came off of Transformers 4, so right now my mind is just so focused on, you know, all of these, however many years I've spent on these Transformers films, which was a great experience. But yeah, something like Your Highness is completely different than action movie. There are action scenes. That's another good example. Tons of action, but totally different.
Right.
Ridiculous action. And I remember the day I got an email from the director, it was their last day of shooting in Ireland. I think they were shooting, and he emailed me and said, hey, man, I knew him from before, and he said, we've been rocking out during this whole shoot to your Transformers music. Do you want to do this crazy comedy movie? And I'm like, yeah, and I was just such a fan of his. And just whatever, just let me know when you're back in L.A., and so he showed me the film, and I loved it. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I thought it was so hilarious, and I laughed every day working on that thing. So,
well, it definitely comes through in the score. And now, you mentioned some of the great fun things about doing Transformers, and you only touched upon the challenge. What would you say was, you know, the most challenging thing about doing Transformers and maybe the most rewarding?
I think the most challenging would definitely be the just keeping up with the picture itself. Like, you know, one particular big sequence that I am proud of was the Dinobot charge down the hill, in China, down into the city, and it's this big, long, dramatic sequence that Michael was really, he said, this is important. This was important to Michael, and he wanted me to start on it early. And which is smart, you know, you don't want to leave the big things to the end. So I I started theme ideas for it and started working on the big sequence when there were no Dinobots in it at all. And I wrote it, you know, just using my imagination. We got it to a place where Michael was really happy, and I was, you know, going, yes, this is great, you know, big sequence done. And as the visuals start coming in, the picture just kind of evolves and changes, and they recut, and it just became such a mess. You know, and it's frustrating because you're so happy with it. You think you've got it sorted, and then the picture changes so much that you need, and it had to change. The visuals were coming in, they couldn't, you know, it was necessary that the picture changes, and it's the nature of these big movies. So I just, you know, there were days where I'm like, oh my God, I worked so many hours on that, and now it's just a mess, and I have to go back into it and either start over or try to salvage bits of it. And so if you take that example and multiply it by 50, because, you know, there are so many scenes where that happened, that is the most challenging thing. It's just to try to keep a score intact when the picture is changing so much, and you don't want it to sound edited. Because I did have a team of music editors who would try to cut it, you know, and edit it to the new scene, to the new version of the scene, but it would always sound kind of, you know, abrupt edits here, and it just was less musical, and so I would have to go back into it and rework it, and just, so that's the most difficult part for me, is, you know, it just kind of wears you out if you're working on the same scene.
Sure, sure. And then, like, you put in all this time and effort, and now, a rethink. Well, and the most satisfying?
I would have to say, now that the film is out and people have heard the score, and I get a lot of comments just through various social media things or whatever, a lot of people have told me that they really like the score and they love that it's so different from the other three.
Yeah.
That has made me feel very good, because Michael coming to me right when we started and saying, this is, you need to do something different. I said, okay, great. And he's like, we have a new cast. You know, same story. We're continuing from part three, but it's all new otherwise. You know, same robots, but even the robots have been redesigned to look cooler than they have in the past. So I started kind of with a blank slate. You know, we have three movies worth of music that I just set aside, and we would go to it if we needed it, but let's just start with a blank slate. And so I spent a couple months really writing all of these new things that are in the film, and people seem to be responding to it. And I appreciate all the comments that they give me. But that was the one that stuck with me, that we love it, and it doesn't sound like anything like the first three, but it still sounds like Transformers.
Well, that's true, because, you know, you mentioned that the director of Your Highness said they were rocking out to the Transformers score, and there was definitely a strong rock influence, I thought, especially in the first two, that, you know, gave that sense of, you know, just there's a sense, you know, when you've got almost a rock and roll soundtrack and you've got guitars out front and, you know, certain kind of sensibility, it kind of made the movie and the whole thing seem fresh. But as you get into the series, and there's certain things you're expecting from a Transformers movie. Now, did you find that at all limiting, or did you just find new ways of sort of giving the same type of feel?
I generally, and I don't think specifically about it, but each film, I always start by creating new sounds, because I have, as you can imagine, I have a huge library of audio files that I know they'll work. You know, again, it would be less interesting for me to do that. So for the drums, for instance, I brought my brother in, who's a drummer in a band, and he, you know, I thought, well, what if we just bring a drum kit in as opposed to giant Tyco drums? Let me just see what happens. And so I just did a session at my studio with him, and banging away on his toms and snares, and created a library of cool drum loops out of that, and use them in some of the themes that you hear in the movie, and also a guitar session I did, just to create get the creative juices flowing, and a lot of the film is in China, so I brought in some Chinese musicians just to see what would happen. And so, again, it's just more interesting for me to create. And on a film like this, you know, fortunately you have the budget to kind of experiment, and I can have a drum session and have another session here and there. Some movies are a bit more limiting budget-wise, and you can't do as much of that, but fortunately, Bay and Paramount give me a good budget to experiment sonically, so that's, I think that helps give each, that has helped give each movie a different sound, and it makes it more fun for me, and Bay always loves new sounds. If he heard anything on this, on part four that sounded too much like part three or two or one, he would say, I think we've heard that before. So he would call me out if I went too close to the other ones, and we would just, you know, I would change it, and then he would be happy. So was,
well, that's kind of good in a way. Kind of keeps you real, you know.
Totally. Oh yeah. No, he's very keen on. He's very zeroed in on the sounds of his movies. He's told me before the sound for him is 50% of his film, and so he really places a lot of importance on it.
Hmm. Now, I guess my last question is more of an industry question. You know, of late, I interview a lot of composers, and a few composers have told me how, on the one hand, you know, with all the software and electronics and things like that, it's made it easier to do scores and to create, you know, something that sounds close to what the final score is going to sound like. But at the same time, in the eyes of some studios, it's devalued the scoring process, and they're paying less and less. Do you find that the case? I mean, clearly, working on a Michael Bay film is an exception to the rule.
Right.
Do you find that you're getting offered less and less to do scores than you would have maybe 10 years ago?
I think the industry as a whole, maybe the budgets have come down a little bit, but for the most part, I have to say, the film, and maybe I'm just lucky, but the filmmakers that I've worked with, they all have seen the value in actually recording a live orchestra, even though the samples sound really damn good now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can spend a long time programming a piece of music so that it sounds good enough that a lot of people might not be able to tell. But then you record it live, and then...
with no comparison.
There's no comparison, exactly.
Right,
so,
right.
Fortunately, I don't get asked that often to please do a synth score or a synth orchestra score, because I probably wouldn't do that. I wouldn't accept that particular film project if they want a big sweeping score, but they want me to do it electronically. I don't, it's possible, but it's just not optimal, as you know, obviously.
Sure,
so
sure.
But that hasn't happened that much, to be honest. I don't get a lot of that request, so I don't know if other people are getting that request. I'm sure on lower budget films there's just no way around it. But there's always a way to augment. You have one cello player come in and play a line. It makes all the difference in the world, or one violin player, or there's always a way to give it a little bit of life. But
well, that's actually encouraging to hear. Well, Steve, I don't want to keep you too long, but I could easily talk to you the rest of the afternoon, just so you know. But I've really enjoyed your work for a long time, and what's next? Do you have anything in the hopper?
You know, I just read a few scripts, and I'm not signed on to do anything. After every Transformers film, I block out a couple months to do nothing, to just sit in a dark room and look at nothing and listen to nothing. No. And my wife is actually pregnant, so... I wanted to block out some time to.
Ah, so you produce more than film scores?
Yeah. The first, the human production, I guess.
Oh, okay, all right.
but yeah, there are a couple things coming up, but nothing. I haven't signed on to anything, so I hesitate to say. But I hope to do at least one of these things that I've read. You never know.
And you are tuned to listener sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift, and you've been listening to an interview with composer Steve Jablonsky, who is, among other things, done the score for the new film Transformers Age of Extinction. Next up, I've got an interview with Rob Reiner, writer-director of a number of great films, including Stand By Me, Bucket List, and a number of just great films over the years. And he's got a new film coming out this Friday called And So It Goes. Got a chance to sit and talk with him. So stay tuned. You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with Rob Reiner. Rob, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
So my first question I've always wanted to ask you, when did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
You know, I think I knew that very early on. I mean, even when I was in my teenage years, I always looked to the overall and the bigger picture. I mean, when I was 19, I started my own improvisational theater group. When I was going to UCLA, I acted and directed it. I directed theater in Los Angeles. And so even before I did All in the Family, I was always thinking that this is what I wanted to do.
Okay, well, two more contextual questions like that. Why do you think we, as human beings, need to tell stories?
I think that we like seeing stories or hearing stories because it helps us either inform our own life experience, we recognize ourselves in these things, and it enhances our life experience. It either sheds light on it, or it makes us feel good about being connected to other human beings. We're going through similar things to the characters that the characters in the film or the play or the book are going through.
Hmm. And my last question like that is, what do you think makes a good story and a story worth telling?
For me, what makes a good story is that you have characters that people can connect with in some way, and they're going through life experiences that are familiar, and that there is some growth. And not every character has to grow, but, you know, and the way I look at it, people go through life and they take from experiences they have, and hopefully that, informs how they make choices later on. So if I'm making a movie about a character, I want that character to get something out of it or go through a journey that he winds up getting something out of the journey he's going through.
Well, you definitely seem to have your female characters are often more evolved than your male characters.
Without question. And I think it's just true.
I agree.
You know, I mean, you know, here's the thing. You know, you hear this all the time where people will say, girls mature faster than boys. But the truth of the matter is girls are more mature than boys. They just are at every stage of life. Girls have a greater understanding of what's important. They are more emotionally developed, and they're just more connected to other human beings. And I think that guys, they can't understand what it is. I mean, we try, but we can't ever understand what it's like to have another human being growing inside you, which instinctively, innately, makes you understand the value of life and how connected you are to another human being. And I think that women know this instinctively. They know what's important, and we have to kind of learn, you know. I've often said that, you know, if women were in charge, we would have a lot less war, because they value life a lot more than men do. Men, you know, we'll go along and then, you know, we'll just shoot off, you know, we'll shoot at somebody, get mad or whatever. And it takes women, I think, to help raise us. You hear this all the time, where you'll talk to a woman who's married and she has three kids or whatever, and she'll say, You know, I have three children that I gave birth to, and then I have my husband. You know, and they all talk about, and it's, you know, you can laugh at it. We all laugh at it, but it, you know, the truth is that's what that's the way they view it, because they see the man as somebody that they have to also raise. And I see that as I've gotten older, that that is the case.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In your film, not only that, the two main characters, Diane Keaton and Michael Douglas, who they play, the Diane Keaton character clearly embraces motion much more, whereas as the Michael Douglas character rejects it. And so maybe they both have tipped too far to the other side, and they kind of need each other to balance.
Well, in this case, they yes, and by the way, I think men and women do need each other to balance. I mean, you know, there's something about the impulsiveness and the problem-solving thing that men do that don't, you know, the practicality of not factoring in emotional stuff, that women need a little of that, you know, just as men need a lot more of the emotional intelligence that women provide. They do need that balance. And I think in the case of this film, you know, with Diane and Michael playing these two characters who both lost their wives, they have both shut the door on the possibility of experiencing any more love in their lives. And so what this film is about is an extension of Bucket List, which is basically you live until you die, you know, and if you are, you could be open to, you know, finding love again, even at a later stage in life.
Well, you know, so there are a number of things about the film that I really liked, and you spoke about balance. One of the things that you're able to do very well, and not every director can, clearly, is have that balance between comedy and drama, where they're talking about deadly serious things, whether it's death or cancer, but then suddenly, how do you find that balance and know, pacing-wise, where what needs to come?
That's a great question, and it's an instinctive thing that I have. I don't think I think about it in any kind of calculated way, but number one, I know that I enjoy, whether it's theater or movies, that have that mixture and have that balance between humor and drama. You know, one of the first things I ever saw when I was 17 years old and I was an apprentice at the Bucks County Playhouse was a production of Thousand Clowns. And this is a very serious play that has a lot of laughs in it. And I looked at that and I went, wow, you know, you mean you can blend a lot of humor with a lot of very serious emotional things and it can work. And to me, it is the most satisfying type of theater and type of film because, you know, life is dramatic and tragic and emotional. It's both. And if you're doing something that is a reflection of life in some way, it's going to have both of those things. So you try to find a way to balance it. And it's an instinct of when to go, when to make the left. You don't want to tip things one way too much or the other.
Hmm. Well, all right, another question I have to ask you, and I asked this actually of Francis Ford Coppola, and the person who came to mind, of course, was Rod Serling, where you have some of your greatest successes, let's say, earlier in your life. Now, for some people, that can be fine, and you go on, you do what you do, but for some people, they're always trying to recapture whatever success they had. How do you deal with that, having had the greatest success and then having a film that doesn't do as well?
Well, you know, here's the thing. You just have to enjoy the doing of it. I mean, you know, a few years ago, I had this film, Bucket List, which was an enormous hit. You know, it's one of the biggest pictures I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's way later from some of the earlier films. But it doesn't really matter because you can't think about chasing, successes or things like that. You learn as you get older the things that you kind of intellectually know when you're young, which is you enjoy the process. You enjoy the doing of it. But you start internalizing that as you get older and realize that it really is true. There's a great line in a movie. It was based on a play called The Best Man, and it's Gore Vidal. And in this movie, Henry Fonda and Cliff Robertson are both vying for the support of this ex-president because they're trying to get nominated for their party. And Henry Fonda is kind of an Adlai Stevenson, very intellectual guy. Cliff Robertson is a red baiter. You know, he's a go after the commies, do anything to win, and all that. And the old man, who's the former president, is like a Harry Truman guy. He comes in, he talks to Cliff Robertson, who's a guy named Joe Cantwell, and he said, let me ask you something, Joe. Do you believe the ends justify the means? And Cliff Robertson says, I do, sir. And he says, well, let me tell you something, Joe. There are no ends, only means. And it's a great line that I heard when I was a young person, and I thought, it was a great line, but as I've gotten older, I realized that's really true. There is an end, and it's called death, but up until then, it's only means. And so you have to enjoy the doing of it, and whether it's successful or not successful or whatever. I mean, maybe Francis Coppola, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't enjoy making films anymore.
No, he does. He does.
Oh, he does. Okay. So, well, that's good.
That was interesting. He said he felt that you shouldn't. He felt similar to what you said, that right. He loves making films.
Right.
He makes films that he would want to see.
Right. Well, that's all you can do. That's all you can do. I mean, you know, you can't worry about what's going to be a success, what's not, what's going to be critically acclaimed, what's not. You just do it. I mean, I learned this very early on when I did All in the Family and it first became a hit, and I went out. I was on the street one day, and a guy comes up to me. I swear this is true. And he says to me, All in the Family is the best show on television, he says to me. And he says, that and the Beverly Hillbillies are the two best shows on television. And I said, okay, I get this. I get this.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not about, you know, what somebody else thinks. This
right.
is about what I think has to happen.
Well, okay. One more question. Okay. Okay. I'm going to boil it down.
Yeah.
I think a film is really directed three times. First, when it's being written.
Yeah.
Second, on set. And third, in the editing.
That's
right. What's your favorite part, and what do you get out of each? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. The post-production, is the two huge creative elements in the post-production. One is the editing, obviously, and the music, adding the music. Those are the two major elements in post-production. My favorite part is the writing process and the editing process. I find it's the most creative for me. The making of the movie is more like, you try to create a right atmosphere, and if you have the right script and you've cast the right actors, and I'm not a technical filmmaker. I basically just put the camera in a place where it gives the audience the best seat in the house. So I'm just telling the story of what I've already worked out in the script, and then we've got hopefully the right actors. And if you've done that, you're 90% home, you know. So then the rest of it is about, you know, putting those pieces together. So the most creative part for me is the writing, and then the editing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get one more question in there.
They'll
kick me out. I once interviewed this painter who did these giant abstract paintings, took up the whole wall. And I remember walking around the studio and I said to him, wow, how do you know when you're done?
And
he says, well, a painting is never done until somebody else sees it. So I'm curious to you, especially when it comes to editing, especially when it comes to pacing, comedy, drama, how do you know when you're done? When do you stop? Or do you have to just stop yourself?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you're limited by practical realities, which is you have so much money that you can't keep going because, you know, with a painter, you know, you're working with fairly inexpensive materials. With a film, you're working with very, very expensive material. So, you know, you're basically confined by the practical realities of it.
And it always worked for you?
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you'd have to have more time, or you would like to have maybe done something a little different, but then there you are.
And this is still Night Shift. Next up, some of the best of Night Shift here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. And you're listening to Night Shift here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM. You can like us on Facebook, N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T. You can go to our website and hear shows going back for the last 7 years. LifeIsLikeScienceFiction.com. You can follow us on Twitter, N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T-Z. And you can email us at LifeIsLikeScienceFiction@gmail.com.
Jean-Paul Sartre expressed it, the essence of reality is scarcity. There isn't enough of love in the world, enough food, enough justice, enough time in life. To gain any sense of satisfaction from our existence, we must go into heady conflict with the forces of scarcity. To be alive is to be in perpetual conflict at one or all three levels of our being.
Executive Order AUC 3423. Listen to this, boys.
And you're listening to Night Shift here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. 99.5 FM. You can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. You can go to our website and hear shows going back for the last 7 years. LifeIsLikeScienceFiction.com. You can follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. And you can email us at LifeIsLikeScienceFiction@gmail.com.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
It's not like anything else here.
It's all you can think about.
On the air.
All you can listen to.
And it only happens
once
a week.
Oh, no. So good, though.
Night Shift.
Night Shift.
Mondays.
BMW Holiday Sales Drive. Lease the 2000.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Hi, this is Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia. Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia.
This is Bob Central. Channel open for Executive Order AUC 3423. Listen to this, boys.
And you don't think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh? You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
It seems to me that the overall vagueness of your memory suggests that we might clarify them a little bit by hypnosis. Would you be agreeable to that?
Hypnosis?
It's a simple process. It's sometimes very helpful in cases of psychological trauma when people have difficulty remembering what happened to them.
It's not exactly the electric chair.
I'm going to count to 10 as you're falling asleep. And when I'm finished, you'll be deeply, deeply asleep. 1, falling asleep. 2, falling asleep. Falling asleep. 3, falling asleep. Falling asleep. 4, falling asleep. 5, falling asleep. Falling asleep.
It is time.
my people. We'll be right back. I'm talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I remember.
Tuesday morning.
It only happens here. Listen to Sponsored Radio.
WBAI.
99.5. The name of the show.
Night. got it. I'm holding it.
Turn it up.
Right here.
Oh. In the air.
Turn.
We're on the air. We're on the air.
We are the air.
We're on the air.
We are Night Shift.
Can you feel it?
Night Shift. Night Shift.
And I'm wrapping it.
Right here.
Once a week.
Night Shift.
It's what you want.
I want some.
It's what you need.
I need two.
Mondays.
Night.
Midnight.
I need two. Right here. Now. Give it to me.
On listener sponsored radio.
Give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me.
Give it to me. AI.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
99.5.
Oh, I'm feeling it.
Night. Shift.
We'll answer the phones if you call us. Ah, Night Shift. Night Shift. Night Shift. Oh. You know, I had a feeling you were coming tonight. I had a real feeling you were coming tonight. And, you know, I was so excited because, I will you get on the mic as soon as you can? How are you? What's going on? Oh, I've got goosebumps.
I heard you doing the heavy breathing thing.
Oh, did you? You were doing the Night Shift.
10,000 sponsored radio. WBAI.
Night Shift.
Here we go.
Yes.
Night Shift. I'm loving that shirt too, Mike Sargent. Oh, yeah. Very cool. No, I'm in New York. I'm supposed to say it's sick. It's really sick.
Oh, really? You are. You are living it.
All right. We're all internet savvy and everything now.
Oh, we're doing whatever. We're trying to find our way along the line.
It's good.
He's trying to be like Joe. Joe gets on the show and just plays with the computer. I know you do too.
I do too.
Valley, I've seen you get lost in the computer. You tend to listen to sponsored radio, WBAI.
Not lost.
Valley, you can sit over there. You don't have to sit on my lap.
I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with
you can sit right there.
The original...
I'm coming closer.
Something.
What am I? The original
Hi.
What?
The original something from some
Oh, my God. How
returned.
Are you? Is this mic on? Turn her this mic
and
on.
I didn't even get a hug. She's there.
Know,
she's next to you.
Well, of
it's
course.
Just, it's
I got
hair.
A whole thing going on.
It's the long hair.
Let me look into your eyes. I have a whole eye thing going on.
WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift, and the setup.
Yeah, what setup? You setting us up?
It's different. But somehow.
It's all the same. It's all good. It's beyond good. would ask you to...
Well, you tuned to listen to Sports Radio, WBAI.
To play the very game with me, but
the show is in motion. Here on Night Shift, life is
science
fiction.
I can't help myself right now.
And I'm sorry. I've come to realize doing the show that my life, in a way, is like science fiction. People I know. People like Chris.
Characters.
Valley, you're from your own planet too, Valley. Don't act like you're not a character. Valley, total character.
Why do you say she's a total character?
She is, because she is. Get to know her just a little bit.
No, look, she's got a whole thing going on.
Yes.
That was, you know, that was Mike's old statement back in the old days. When we used to hang out, he would like, he'd say like, she had a whole thing going on.
Yeah.
You know? And the second thing, like, we would be hanging out in a room and doing something, and he would be like, hey man, you know, she's, I'm like, what? She's, digging your scene, man. You know?
Oh,
and I'll be like, really?
This is a good thing.
And then he's like, she has a whole thing going on. So.
What are you deciphering, Mike Sargent?
So when we were talking the other day, he goes, I said, so what's Val's story? He goes, she has a whole thing going on.
Val's got a whole thing going on.
Does anybody out there tonight have a whole thing going on?
No, I do have a subject. Yeah.
I need the microphone going on.
Yeah, you turn
your microphone is your microphone is on. Calm yourself. Turn up your
is mine on?
Turn up your headphones.
Is mine on? Yeah, okay. Yes. I have a whole. I have
is
a whole
your headphone
thing.
Output not happening?
It's kind of weird. You know.
Let's see.
Do you have a whole thing going on, Mike?
I try to.
So explain to me why it's like science fiction. Like, what happened to you today? Because I could tell you
a lot of. Okay, you could tell me what.
I could tell you. I mean, I was in North Carolina. Like, I was in North Carolina. Let's say like. 14 hours ago, you know, and there was a whole thing going on down there.
Well, you know, I've heard tell that in most parts of the world,
sweet tea is like you sit there and they give you more sweet tea. And I ate at some of the best places that you could ever imagine. This food was just I don't know what it was called.
You went down to North Carolina to have tea?
Yeah, just to have sweet tea.
I understand.
Sweet tea and other
continental kind of guy.
Oh, I was having sweet tea.
What about mint juleps? Aren't you supposed to have
mint
juleps when
and,
you're down there?
Just all kinds of North Carolinian food.
Is it mint
julep? And I started talking like this. I said, "Well, hello, how are you?" And they were like looking at me because every once in a while I would slip up, and they were like, "You're a Yankee, aren't you?"
Slip like, up for what? Like
talking
for
like
being
a fool.
They
said you one of those Yankees, aren't you? And I was like, I got a whole thing going.
Oddly
on.
Oddly enough, listening to Chris, you wouldn't think there would be a theme to the show, but the theme to the show is
insult one has come out.
Here's the question. Here's the theme. And here's the theme. This is for you too, Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You have to answer the theme, the question, the Night Shift question, which is the theme. How has your world changed in the last year? Chris?
I could say my life changes on a constant.
What's the most significant change over the last year in your life?
A lot, man. Just my perspective of how I view the world and how...
In regards to,
let's say, you know, and I've talked to you about this a lot. You know, if you have a plan, it's like, go tell God your plan. You know, I've got a plan of what I want to do with my life or what I want to do. And it's like, he'll just start laughing.
I've heard that quote.
I mean, it's not anything.
You want to hear God laugh, before. Make plans.
Make big plans. And the thing is that, you know, sometimes, you know, you show up thinking you know what it is you want to do and you think you know it and you think you got it. And you show up and you're Charlie Brown. You know, I mean,
so
you know,
this is something significant in your life,
you know,
a plan you had did not happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, plans that I may have thought like this may be the direction of where I want to go with my life or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, wait a second, this may not be in the direction you want to go or what you may want to do, and or who you want to do it with or who you don't want to do it with, and then you know. Then you start looking at, you said, you know, how life can change in an instant just like that, and it can. So, are you going to do what you want to do instantaneously? Like, someone started complaining to me, I said, well, put your hand in your pocket and pull out some change and get on it. You know, and that's what I've...
Pull out some change and get on it. Yeah. I hear you, man. Well.
So that's...
This is
where I'm
grotto.
At. So when you say to me, what have I learned? To stick your hand in your pocket... And pull out some change do what it is you really want to do. You know, if you want to be on the radio in New York, you know, you get your butt down
Sergeant.
You hang out with Mike Sargent, you know, or whatever it is
party
you want
on.
To do, you know, and
party
if,
on.
You know, party on, God, man. You know, if you want to share grapes with Val, you just, you know, you bring a vine of grapes. you know?
Yes.
But
I think a lot of times people don't know what they really yearn for on the inside, though, because so many times we're caught up in doing the day-to-day things. I had somebody do a really interesting exercise on me lately, and it taught me something about myself that I had no clue. And they said, do this in your heads, guys listening out there. They said, imagine tomorrow you inherit hundreds of millions of dollars, not a few million.
Right.
Okay? And so now we're going to warp ahead 6 months from now. And I want you to envision that you are in bed and you're in great sheets and great comfort and you're waking up and you're just, it's not an alarm clock. You're just waking up and coming into awareness and you remember where you are and who you are and what's happening in your life. And you are smiling because now you're going to throw the covers back. You're going to get up. And 6 months has gone by. So you have bought presents for everyone you could have possibly bought them for, given gifts of homes and cars and jewelry and traveled and kind of gotten all of that out of your system. You're getting up out of bed and you are anticipating this day because you are going to do what? What is it that you really, really want to do inside that would make you feel like throwing back the covers and getting up and that you're looking forward to? And there's one answer that everyone predominantly says when they're asked this question, when you go through this exercise, one type of an answer. And then me, the heartless wench, after you give that one answer, I'm going to go a little deeper and say, okay, that's the answer that everyone usually comes to initially. Now, after that, what do you want to do? So what would you say? And this isn't like a quickie, you know, the answer doesn't just pop up like a Pop-Tart popping out of a toaster.
Wait, hold on. Before you answer that question.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Valley's very, very slick how she doesn't answer our question.
Yeah.
She asks her own question.
Yeah. You know, I do want to answer. Before I give my answer, I want you to go through the thought process I went through so you'll kind of understand when I say my answer why I came up with it.
Intellectual context in your answer.
Right.
I understand.
There's a lot. I mean, there was a couple of things that happened to me over the last 2 months that I talked about. Matter of fact, you weren't on the show when I was on 2 weeks ago. Have you ever looked into somebody's eyes and had, like, this most incredible connection? Like, you have?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And, well, this person that I've had that with, I mean, I'm so Charlie Brown, okay? So there's no way in the world anything's ever going to happen because I'm so Charlie Brown. But today's her birthday.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So... okay, so now, look into my eyes, Val.
So you're pulling back the covers.
No, check it, yeah. So,
you're going to get up.
Yeah,
you're
going to
do something.
What am I going to do?
Something with the day. What are you looking forward to?
Looking into that girl's eyes. Oh, come on, can I? Why are you rolling your eyes?
That's
it's not a man thing.
No,
it's an amazing, incredible...
True. No, it's important to be with someone you value, but what are you going to do with your talents? What are you going to do with your time? What are you passionate about? What is it deep inside you that you really would look forward to spending your time doing and you would feel good about? If absolutely, the millions and millions are in the bank, everybody's, you know, given presents and you've traveled and you've... done whatever it was that you had.
What's the most important thing that you'd want?
That's right.
To do?
Wake up, Mike. How about you? No.
She just jumped.
No, just think about it for a minute.
Yeah,
it's not a quick thing.
No, it's absolutely. I know Mike. One of Mike's answers.
So do I. But
you
I want to.
Yeah. No.
But
no. No. Michael answered. I'm not going
to
answer for Mike. But I mean, you know, he. Yeah. He's going to go ahead, Mike.
I'm the host.
Spit the grape out.
You're the host.
Yeah.
I don't have to answer.
you don't have to answer, but that's why we're curious about what you think.
I
will say this, though.
Well, what about you? What would you like to do?
My very first thought when I did this mental exercise, my very first thought is, and let me preface this by saying, thankfully, a few weeks ago, I received an award for writing the best TV commercial of the year.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
Excellent.
So when
writing
I
was, the best TV commercial?
Mm-hmm.
Which one was that?
Songbird Hearing. It won for Best TV Commercial of the Year. So,
what's that award? What's that called?
It's
an EPI,
something like that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, congratulations.
Thanks. So, anyway, I was thinking maybe I'd like to have a really great marketing company. Maybe one here, one in London, one in LA. marketing is my thing and writing, and hire the best of the best and really try to have integrity and creativity and all of those types of things. So initially, that's what I was thinking my answer would be. Only when I went through this mental exercise and I went through the steps of really putting myself in the bed, getting throwing the covers back, now what do I want to do? I thought, whoa, this is a surprise. What I really want to do is something with art, something artistic. Then the person who was talking me through this said, that's the number one answer everyone says, because that's typically what gets pushed to the back burner in our busy lives now, and we can't do it. So then, after you say, okay, I want to draw or work with music or write or do a screenplay or whatever, you know, the art thing, let's say that that is worked into your life and that's a component of your life. Okay, great. Now, what else do you want to do? This is the critical thing right here. Do you envision that you'd be a motivational speaker? You'd be working to coordinate some type of a charity? Do you want to form your own company? Is something you're doing now on a small scale you want to do on a bigger scale? This is the crux of what is it you're passionate about that you would look forward to, that you would want to spend your time or your talents doing. And for me, I had an epiphany. It was not marketing. I was like, here I could go doing whatever I want, and it wasn't marketing. You know what I wanted to do? Two things. I wanted to do something that would help kids to be able to get books and read throughout the world that don't have access to words, because words are so important to me in reading, and I think, you know, intelligence is power. And the second thing was, lo and behold, I want to do some type of a talk show or something where I could interview people, not just celebrities, but all kinds of people, about their successes and about how they overcame adversity.
Yes. How you got from where you are to where you are.
That would motivate other people.
That's
what I would do, even if it was just for free.
Right. So she's applying for a job here at Night Shift.
I'm signing up. I'll do windows.
You tend to listen to sponsored radio.
There's a button here for call.
WBAI. You have to understand something.
Yes, I know. You haven't given
those
up the phone.
Those people who are calling now?
Yeah. Keep calling.
Those are callers.
I know. We like you.
I haven't even given out the number.
No, you don't have to.
Understand. And do you know the number here, Valerie?
212-209-2900.
Now, the theme of the show
is,
believe it or not, is what has changed most significantly in your life in the last year.
So that changed for me, my whole perception of what's important.
Well, now, hold on. Now, so you're saying that basically, now, in understanding your answer.
Her and I are on the same wavelength, by the way.
Of course.
We have a whole thing going on.
We have a whole thing going on.
I think she's digging your scene.
She's touching my leg.
Ooh.
You know, this is how it all starts.
That's the janitor that just walked by.
Exactly. All right. Now, Valley, so my understanding then is the biggest change is in you realizing that your altruistic nature is stronger than you ever imagined.
Well, I always knew I wanted to do charity things, but I thought given the money and everything that I would want to maybe build a really great marketing firm and maybe hire interns, give low-income kids
a chance to excel,
whatever. But when I really got down to it and I selfishly thought, what would I really get the most psychic income out of? It would be facilitating kids to be able to read and learn, number one. And number two, being in a position where I could interview or bring out the best success stories or motivational stories in regular people and celebrities, but not just celebrities, on how they've overcome adversity or how they've succeeded.
Power talk.
Yeah, exactly. So anybody listening would go, all right, tomorrow I'm getting up and I'm kicking ass and I'm staying on my mission and I'm doing this.
All right, now, if that's your answer.
And you have to.
If that's your answer, then that begs the second question.
Yes.
Second question is, okay, well, it's a two-part question. This is a change. This is not a realization now. We're talking about a change in your life, in your world. Now, when did you realize this, and how has your life changed since this epiphany?
There you go.
I just realized it a couple of weeks ago because I had a friend talk me through this exercise. I mean, prior to that, I wouldn't have even thought it until I put myself in those sheets in that bed and went, whoa, it's not what I wanted to put all my time into what I thought.
Put myself in those sheets in that bed.
Yeah. Mentally.
I understand.
You know?
I understand. I was just taking it in.
Yeah.
Now, okay. I'll buy that. Okay.
And so for right now, thankfully, I'm getting some really good hits on my website of the DR Writer thing, the direct response. It's drwriter.com, so I've been getting some job offers on there. And I'm going to do that now, but now I know that what I really want to do is bigger than that. Mm-hmm. So I'm practical. I don't think that, okay, I'm going to buy 10 lottery tickets tomorrow and scratch them all off and be ready to go with plan number B. But at least it's important to me to know that that's really what would drive me and make me happy and what I would really value most.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to start doing things in my life right now to make that happen, even if it's only part-time or in a smaller degree or networking or whatever.
So basically, you don't want to spend any more time to you don't have time to play. You got to get. You know, what we're talking about is there's no more time to play at the moment.
Okay.
We got to get
all right.
Action.
Valid. So I'm going to encapsulate what you're saying.
Oh, I can see it being encapsulated
terms,
right now.
Uh-huh.
To say that you had a realization that has forced you to change the focus of your life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. And for you, Chris, you've had. Enough experiences or the accumulation or culmination experience that's made you realize that planning is fine, but you know what? There are things that are above.
Yeah, even no matter what
that
you
are out of your hands.
Everything's out of your hands. I mean, I was talking to a guy that had an antique shop. His shop burned down over the winter. He rebuilt his shop. And I saw him, and I hadn't seen him in 2 or 3 months. And I'm like, hey, how you doing, man? I was really happy when I drove by and saw. I smiled. I was happy to see that your shop. And he couldn't move his left arm. And I'm like, well, what's the matter? He goes, well, I was up on the roof, and I fell off the roof. And my left arm is paralyzed.
Mm.
I can't move it at this point. It's been like this for 3 months.
Mm.
And he turned to me, and he says, I want to tell you something. Mm. Your life can change in a second. And he goes, do you hear what I'm saying?
I hear you.
Your life can change in a second.
Have you heard that song by Tim McGraw? Song of the Year.
Whoa.
It was along those lines. It's called Live Like You're Dying.
Live Like You're Dying, man. Well, we are. Get busy living or get busy dying.
All right. So
you, redemption. Yeah.
So I have very interesting co-hosts, I will say. And the phone number here, Chris, do you know
212-209-2900.
Oh, pretty good.
And
pretty good.
We're rocking over here. Yeah.
Let's see. Hello, you're in the air.
Yes.
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 Good morning.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to the young lady. I felt compelled to call.
You felt compelled to call?
Good.
Yeah.
What is your name, first of all?
Well, my name is, can I say
it? Use any name you want,
name,
sir.
Like,
pick a name.
Pick a cool name.
Mr. Friendly.
Yeah.
Mr. Friendly. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Friendly.
You know, this, it's a very interesting subject you're talking about because, I mean, I had this thought myself.
Which thought was that, sir?
Thought as far as what do I really want to do in life?
That's the deep thought. That's the thought.
Yeah.
That's the soul-searching thought.
Yes, yes. And I went back, way back when I was younger, and it seemed as though I used to want to be an astronaut.
All right, now you got to slow this down, sir, because this is a good one. Go ahead.
Yes, I used to want to be an astronaut.
An astronaut?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
As I got older, I developed more interest in music. And then now, it seems as though I want to be more of a spiritual thinker. I enjoy philosophy, theology, all the science that, that has to do with creation. Now, I want to say one thing, right? The world is ever-changing. Mm. So I don't think there's any one thing that a person, will do for the rest of his life. Because you may want to do one thing today, but tomorrow,
we're evolving. We're a work in progress.
Yes, work in progress. So I don't know if it's fair to say that a person is made to do one thing for the rest of his life.
I don't think so. What about
married to one person? Do you believe in that?
Married to one person.
Yeah, is that possible? Can you have sex with the same person for the rest of your life? My goodness.
It depends on how many sets of lingerie she has and how creative she is.
Well, yes, I just want to know your thoughts on that, sir.
Yes, well, my thoughts on that, basically.
What about just holding somebody? What about that, man?
There's
Mr. Romantic.
What about just holding somebody?
Well, see.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Friendly.
Mr. Friendly, what about you holding somebody? Let's all just hold each other
stop,
right now.
Stop. Okay. Let him make his point. Sir, you have a point, right?
I do have a point. There's a confusion between morals and our flesh.
Wait. The confusion between morals and our flesh.
Right.
By our flesh, you mean the...
No, 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 I can break it down.
Break it down, Valley.
Between the big head and the...
Oh, stop!
No, it's true.
Stop! Now, Valley, you speak like a woman. What are you, a woman?
Who, me?
No, no, I'm talking about Valley.
Oh, okay, now...
Yeah, who, you? You, sir.
No, no.
Yeah, you. What are you, a woman?
No, no. Well, okay, see, I think this will only live life once. And
unless you're Shirley MacLaine, and then you live life 54 times.
Unless you've got tickets and you're Dracul.
Okay, yeah, only one time.
Season tickets.
Right, we only live once.
Yeah, so basically you may think that, okay, you're going to be with one person for the rest of your life, but as you get older, you say to yourself, man, life has passed by. I mean, I could have been with this person, that person. Mm. But
life has passed by. Yes.
Life has passed by.
Life has passed by.
That's when you put your hand in your pocket and you got 10 cents.
Which one do you choose?
Do you choose morals or do you choose, do you choose
to
go
with your experience?
Because you feel like you're going to die, you may as well have sex with everything in sight. Is that a realization, sir? Or are you just breaking down to your instincts?
I'm just breaking it down. I understand.
No, but it's not all about sex.
Yes.
You can agree. Just because you're inferring of having relationships with other people, you get a lot more out of it than sex. You learn, I think, from each person you're with.
If you're smart.
So it's not just sex to be gleaned from a multitude of relationships. Mm. It's diversity of cultural points. It's tricks about how to do things faster,
tricks.
Better, cheaper, yeah. whatever.
Tricks.
I mean, you learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you have an excellent
tricks.
Point.
You learn tricks. Valley, wait, I want to say this whole thing about learning tricks from people. Talk to me.
Let me explain.
Sounded like a sociopath.
Yes, Mr. Friendly, I'm listening to you.
Yes. You say, you get different... It's about tricks, sir. The tricks that you can learn from others.
Tricks,
yes,
the rabbit.
Exactly.
The cereal.
I mean, I can look at myself, my personal relationship with different women, let's say. Not all of them I have sex with. As a matter of fact, I only have sex with one of them, right?
Hold on, sir. Before you go too far into that, what did you mean in your answer? I interpret your answer. You say, well, life has gone by, and you say, let your morals lax. What are you talking about? Are you talking about just having lots of female friends? I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you're talking about something else that has to do with the flesh, sir.
Exactly.
Come on.
The flesh is weak. But sometimes when you get deeper in the conversation with a person, you realize that there's more than just sex.
I agree.
Talking to that person. Mm-hmm. So then basically you discover more interest besides sex.
Hopefully.
Yes, sir, okay, sir. All that is nice, and you're painting a nice picture, but you're not saying what you really mean, because where does the conflict then? If you're meeting all these people and having these wonderful conversations, where's the conflict between morals and flesh? Talk to me. What are you talking about?
Sometimes throughout the whole finding yourself and knowing... Knowing the other person, then the confusion becomes a little less intense. You know what I mean? So then sometimes you may cross boundaries. You may go...
Past the moment. You may seize the moment.
You may seize the moment.
And then where are you?
Yeah, that's a T-shirt, Chris. You may seize the moment.
Yes.
People and that. Valley, if you wore that, people would just start grabbing you.
Really?
Yeah, they would.
She can handle herself.
But don't you think, Mr. Friendly, my love out there, don't you think that to be really, really a good sexual encounter, there needs to be an emotional and a spiritual connection also? Or I'll just say that really makes it powerful.
Have some morals, for God's sake.
After a certain point.
Don't let them go lax. Life didn't pass
by. But there is that essence of the moment, and then you get into the eyes.
No, you can still have the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You can still have quickies, even if it's someone with whom you have a spiritual and emotional connection.
I can have an incredible moment out of just the eyes, man.
As a matter of fact, I'll search my whole life for that again.
And I won't be Charlie Brown next time around.
Chris.
But yes,
I completely agree with that. Because you can have a one-night stand with a person you just met.
Uh-huh.
And it's not going to be as significant as if you having sex with a person in which you had
the eyes.
Connection.
You have a lot. Yeah, yeah. You're connected morally, spiritually, and you share the same...
Did you say connected morally? Sir, what are you into? All right, hello, you're on the air.
The aggressive water theory of one of the Russian revolutionaries is that Alexander Kollontai said that having sex... Sex is like drinking a glass of water. Like, if you need a glass of water, you drink. If you don't, if you're not thirsty, you don't drink.
What if the sex is like a fine wine?
Ah, well, then it's to be savored and enjoyed.
There it is.
Alex, the dude, obviously was never into Tantra, or he never experienced it. He was just all about the gulping of the water.
The essence of him fill him. Hello, you're in the air.
Oh, there's more people in the air.
Yes?
We're having a party.
I know people are having great fun there, but the BI News Department's not reporting a 15-year-old got shot in the groin. Speaking of sex, over in Staten Island on Friday by an out-of-control cop.
Out-of-control cop.
And I know you guys, it's really not your fault that the BAI News Department is messing up on this, so don't take it personally, you guys. But
no, I don't take it personally. If they slipped up, you know what? Damn it. I'm going to say something.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something.
Go ahead.
Don't slip up. I'm make it known that that's how I feel.
Thank you for calling
in. Thank you for calling in. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, it's Gigglebox.
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 Gigglebox. Chris, do you have any idea who Gigglebox
is? Yeah, I have a clear idea. I'm looking at a picture right now. It's coming up on the website.
It's coming up on the
site. No, when she calls in, it automatically comes up. Gigglebox.com.
Valley, this is Gigglebox. Gigglebox, this is Valley.
Hi.
Hi.
Gigglebox has new digs now. New digs.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Huh? What?
You got new digs.
Yes, I do. A much bigger room.
So have you been listening while we've been talking?
Same padding. Go ahead. What?
Have you been listening?
Yes, I have.
The last 10 minutes? So then let me ask you this. If you were throwing back the covers and stepping out of bed, what would it be for you?
I'd be waking up to work on the plan for my Entertainment Youth Center.
Entertainment Youth Center.
Nice.
Now, question for you.
Yes?
Jigglebox. What has changed most significantly in your world in the last year?
Actually, a very big change. I finally figured out what the hell I want.
What do you want?
What I want in life. I know what I'm going to be doing a year from now. I plan on being in L.A.
Okay.
That's the plan.
Okay.
I know, as he said, when you met, you want to see God laugh, make plans.
Yeah.
I can tell you some great restaurants to enjoy there, too, and some great beach spots.
Well, good, because I'm opening up a bar and restaurant when I get out there.
Oh, perfect.
So, that's
where I moved from.
Oh, okay.
Former Angelino.
Yeah. Oh. You tell me some good places I can go here, and I got your back, girlfriend.
Chris?
Will do.
Yes, my brother. Yes.
What's that sound? But
that's the sound of change coming. It is.
But you know what I want to do in life? I made a really big list of all the stuff I've ever wanted to do in life.
Right.
And I canceled anything that looked completely unrealistic.
Uh-huh. You mean you made the list?
Yeah.
Everything you want to do in life.
It's very embarrassing.
How old are you now, Gigglebox?
I just turned 21 last month.
Damn. Mm. Listen, you know who A.E. Houseman is? Read that poem now. The only
man in the hole.
Stop.
Which poem?
The Man in the Hole.
When I was 1 in 20, I heard a wise man say,
there it is.
Give pounds and crowns and guineas, but not your heart away.
Oh.
I love that one.
It's a great poem.
He was
you have to read it when
Houseman.
You're 21. You have to read it now. It will have significance now. 21 years from then, you'll be like, wow.
I love that poem. Read it. It's great. Houseman was a smartass and a cynic who was succinct, and it's great. When I was 1 in 20.
Smartass, succinct, cynic. Say that five times fast.
Little Rascals. What was that thing? Read the poem. Read the poem.
What's the phone number here, Valley?
212-209-2900. Call us.
But, Sarge, you want to know the funny thing about this, though?
Sure.
About
after
what?
Making that list and making the plan, all the stuff I've, like, crossed off the list is now, like, popping up. Something I've dreamt about since I was a kid, I finally got to do on Friday. I sing in a recording studio.
You sang in a recording studio.
That was your moment.
Yeah,
it was really cool, but, like, didn't I just cross this off the list?
Yeah, hey, you know what?
Crossing
off the list is a good thing. I crossed a lot of things off my list.
But if fate puts them back on your list, you go for it, girl.
What's that?
Good morning.
We'll see.
How are y'all?
Yeah, all right. Who is this?
Yeah.
Felice?
Luis.
Luis.
Hello, Luis.
Hey, man.
Hi.
What's changed in your life, Luis, in the last year?
In the last year?
Yeah.
Well, I've been working steady.
Yeah.
And I'm making a decent income.
Okay. All right. I hear you. That's a good change. Significant change.
All right, you can meet us for breakfast after the show.
Oh, man, she got a whole thing going on already with the listeners.
That'd be nice, though, but how about you come down for lunch?
All right.
She's accommodating. She'll be down for any kind of a free meal. You know.
Hey, I didn't say I wasn't even buying.
Oh, I
hello, you're on the air. I'm on the air.
Got me some slack.
Hello? Yeah, man.
How you doing?
Mike, back me up. Don't I buy something?
What was that?
I don't know, Mr. What Feedback. Was that? That was Mr. Feedback. Go ahead.
Oh.
What was your question?
My question? Who's speaking? Who's talking to me right now?
That's Valley.
How you doing, Valley?
Hi.
Not Valley, girl.
She sounds like blonde.
And I am blonde. What's your name?
Because she sounds dumb.
Oh.
She's not.
Oh, no, how do you know?
She sounds dumb.
Because it's me. I'm talking.
What?
It was a trick question. How do you know?
I got to call up.
What's the phone number?
You sound dumb. Okay, bye.
212-209-2900. Would someone dumb be able to quote Houseman on no notice whatsoever? Oh. I think not.
He's touched a nerve, please. Don't let them get you riled up. I think Mike said to me one time, he goes, you know, there's not one caller out there that could possibly ever rile me at this point. He goes, I can just sit.
Yeah, this is my domain.
Please.
You know. But the funniest story to me about Mike is the time machine story.
What time machine story?
The time machine story where Mike says, I said, Mike, if you had a time machine, what would you do with it? And you say, I put the key in, start the thing up, and push the lever. Would you go back in time or would you go forward? He starts laughing. He says this every time. He goes, I would push the lever forward, right? Okay, Mike, say it.
It's your story.
And he said it'd start going, you know, to the future, and he'd just pray that when he stopped, everything would be okay. Because the last thing he'll ever do is pull that lever back in time. Mike's like, no way, I ain't ever going back in time. Not 1 minute back. I'm going forward. And that's a good attitude. That's a good, exactly. And that's why I bring it up, because that is what we're talking about, Mike. It's talking about, you know, review your past, but why don't you get in the time machine and start moving forward?
You know, in Covey's Seven Habits, he had a really interesting anecdote about the importance of moving forward. Mm-hmm. His son played ball as a quarterback for a college team. And so Covey's point was, whenever you make a mistake or have some experience in life, don't dwell on it over and over and think, I screwed up, or what should I have done different, or whatever. He says, analyze it, decide what you would do differently, and move forward. And so he suggested that we have a physical sign almost to snap from that point and move forward. So his son's was, after he finished the play on the field, as he was trotting back to the huddle, he would be reflecting on the play, what he would do differently, what went right, what went wrong. When he got to the huddle, he would snap his wristband, his little terry cloth wristband. That was his physical sign. Flush it, dump it, over, focus on the next play, and move forward.
So basically, he's choking on a thing.
I can just see that used in a play. Yeah. We're like,
what?
A doctor's trying to learn to get over it.
Yeah,
so he's got like a big fat rubber band.
He's
in a conversation with somebody, and it's like, every answer she gives.
What was your line? Say it. Chump it.
He'd be snapping
it. What was it? What was the chump
like,
it? Try
to let it go.
What was you saying? What was the thing? What was the line?
Do
you remember what it was?
I don't know why they came to. Hello, you're in the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah.
Who's
this?
What's
your
name?
You just hung up on him. Yeah, too bad.
Sorry about that.
Hello, you're on the air.
Lost you.
You got to get up on the night shift. Oh, who's this, Danny?
No.
Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey.
How you guys doing?
All right.
So we're doing good. How you doing?
What has changed most significantly in your life in the last year, sir?
Oh, my God.
Where do we begin?
Biggest significant change.
No, I just got reunited with a family member.
Really?
Oh, wow.
That's always good. Brother.
A long lost brother. That's pretty powerful.
Puerto Rico. Can you believe it?
Wow. Wow. Now, lost how? Was he like, you know, in a cult?
No.
Did you guys?
Man was lost in the hurricane. Bermuda Triangle came on.
Did you guys have a different parent?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And what's the name? His friend called my house that I have the same number.
Right.
And I was like, I just fell to the floor. I said, no way.
Whoa.
And we just met. And I was like, oh, my God.
Can I ask you how much older or younger? How much difference is there between you guys?
2 years younger than him.
So how much?
2 years, he said.
2 years? Wow.
So like this, about 2 years, 1 month.
Do you feel like after you met one another that even though you were raised apart and you didn't know one another your whole lives, that there were innate similarities in you?
Exactly. No, but the connection was there. I mean,
wow.
He has the same...
You see some of yourself in him.
Exactly.
Mannerisms.
Exactly.
I understand.
I really couldn't believe it.
It's genetic.
Congratulations. You
know, and we're going to open up a business in Puerto Rico.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to open up a business.
Good luck.
A small restaurant.
Good for you.
We're going to have it up here in New York soon.
All right, you should call it Giggle Box.
No, that's great.
Let us know, man. We'll come on down with some of that, whatever you
want.
We'll be live at Giggle Box.
Call us, and we'll come down and help you cut the ribbon. That's awesome.
Wait, it's going to be in Puerto Rico? Leg Giggle Box.
No, it's going to make it in New York, too.
They're going to do it in New York also.
They're going for it.
I appreciate that, guys.
What is your name?
Hello?
Sorry. No, we're here.
Yeah, what was your name?
My name is John.
John. Okay, cool. You keep us posted on that progress, and thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you.
We send out positive vibes to you, John.
Thank you.
Yeah,
all right,
we can use a lot of positive vibes.
Hello, you're on the air.
This is fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, good evening, how's everybody?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Everything's everything.
All right, everybody's good. You know, I did notice something about your show that I feel that is positive.
We give you a forum for your accent.
Uplifting me in ways that you could only imagine.
Okay.
And I'm referring to the fact that you finally, you know, beamed your senses and kicked Joe off your show.
Oh, stop. Stop. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Like the god of mischief.
Lopi's a good name, too. You know,
god of mischief.
How much change do you got in your pocket?
Hey, you know.
Chris just wants to know.
Can I tell you something about Chris, though? Chris
what?
Is spent. No change. You know what I'm saying?
Not you. So,
Lopi,
what's up,
I'm sorry.
I
couldn't help it.
No, no. I can listen. You know what? Sometimes, listen, I feel that way. You know, it's real. No, I'm serious. What do you do when, you know, here's an interesting.
When you're spent, no change?
No, seriously. I mean, how often does it happen? I mean, sometimes, you know, you can come running up and hit that wall. No matter how positive you want to be, you know, things happen to you. I mean, all of a sudden, you know.
But stop viewing it as a wall. It's not a wall.
I know.
So, yeah,
in every failure, there is always success, because if you fail, you'll find success.
I mean, so sick of people saying something's not meant to be.
It's not meant to be easy. No, how about this line now?
No, it's just not meant to be easy.
This is the newest line. It is what it is. What does that mean?
That's not new.
It is what it is. Well, it's new to me.
Okay. It's because you live upstate.
No, I'm all about this line.
It is what it is.
Most things are 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration.
That comes from film critique.
That's it. So, Loki, what's up with you tonight?
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
How was the new Tomb
Raider? It is what it is.
It is
what it is. That's all anybody ever says to me. I say, well, what do you think? It is what it is, okay? Go ahead.
All right, well, let's take some of these calls. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes. Hey, you forgot about Loki.
Yeah, Loki.
Oh, yeah, sorry,
Loki,
man.
How has your life changed? God of mischief.
God of mischief. I wanted to read something on intuition.
Okay.
You're going to read something on intuition. All right, before you read it, why are you reading it? Something you found fascinating?
I guess it struck a chord. I read it.
Okay.
About following your instincts?
Yeah, that's what it says. It says intuition. A super logic that cuts out all routine processes of
a
thought.
A super logic.
The super logic.
Okay.
That cuts out all routine processes of thought and leads straight from problem to answer.
Nice.
That's Albert Einstein.
Very nice.
Nice.
And Einstein knew. I mean, obviously Einstein went into the black void where no one had gone before and had some breakthroughs, and this is cool. I mean, this is one of his techniques.
All right, I do want to tell you a little bit of Life is Like Science Fiction, just so we keep it grounded in reality of life. Jumbo Squid, warm the waters of B.C. Is Doc Ellis is one of your people, Chris? One of your people are called.
One of my people. Which line is he on? Who's
I
that?
I have no idea.
Wait, don't you see two lines? So it would have been the last line you picked up. Right. So don't hang
did
up.
Did you know
on
that,
line.
They had jumbo flying squids? Did you know that?
Jumbo shrimp.
Jumbo flying squids. Flying.
Flying.
Jumbo flying squids. Another sign of global climate change. Hello, you're on the air.
Fire, Doc Ellis. Kick his ass out.
What?
I don't think you'll hang up on Doc Elliott.
No, I won't, man. How you doing, man? What are you doing tonight? You're out in Pennsylvania, right? Where are you?
Hanging out.
These are your people?
It's one of my buddies.
One of your people.
How you doing tonight, man?
I thought you were real, sir.
It's weird.
I'm enjoying the show, man.
You liking it?
think everyone talks out of line, though, man. You guys need like a talking stick.
No, it's part of the vibe. Stick. It's part of the vibe. We're
like
a family.
It's a whole vibe, man.
A talking stick.
We're spontaneous. It's like sitting
hit him with the talking stick.
It's like you're sitting
so what happened to you with your life, man?
Yeah, how has your life changed?
Man, I got problems, man. I got
talk
problems.
To me. Talk to me. What's the biggest significant change in your life in the last year?
Well, I got this buddy of mine, right? We're good friends and shit, and
Whoop, don't curse.
Oh.
That's right.
Darn it.
You're not talking to friends. This is broadcast.
Yeah, so
you're talking to New York, man.
Yeah, we're just hanging out. We're trying to make things work with it, you know? Honesty's a tough thing I'm beginning to learn, but I think it's important, you know?
Yeah, honesty is very empowering. I find that that I am so beholden to
the power of honesty.
Honesty, man. Honesty is like the most important thing that I've learned today, and I am so grateful for that. And, like, you don't have any idea how grateful I am.
Check this out, then.
Yeah, man, it really is, man.
Check this out, both of you guys. What would you say to this question? When is it okay to lie?
That's a very important question. And,
well,
and
in
I'm
light
not
of what
prepping
you
her for that
said,
one.
Yeah.
When is it important? Okay.
When is it okay?
When
to
is the
lie?
Line when it's your business, and then when? And what? When do you think is an important time? Do you think is what about integrity? And I mean, is it okay to lie?
Is it okay?
That's
point,
a good T-shirt.
Is it what okay about integrity? To lie ever?
Well, actually,
when?
Mike, when is a good time? I mean, seriously, what would you say?
I'm gonna give you three quick little scenarios.
Okay.
A woman comes out of the dressing room and says, "Does this make my butt look fat?" Number one, hold that thought.
Okay.
Number two, a woman comes out of the dressing room and she's a little chubby. And keep this in mind, she's a little chubby, but she has this dress on. It's pretty tight. And she says to you, "I have to go to a wedding in an hour and this is the only dress in the place that fits me. What do you think? Should I get it?" What do you do?
Right.
And so just on those scenarios right there,
what's
you know,
the third?
Yeah, what do you say?
What's the third one, though?
The third is, do you think I should stay with him or not regarding a relationship? Or do you think I should stay with her or not regarding someone's in a relationship? Each of those three is a potential hand grenade.
I'll go a step further. What happens if you like somebody, right? And the person you're talking to about it is already been with or with that other person?
Okay.
Been in, I've been in that situation.
We all have, right? So you say, "Well, I really like her," and then he's like, "So does he tell you, you're my brother?" You know, I mean, what do you do there? Do you lie? Do you say, "That's cool, man," and I gotta get it? You know, what do you do? How do you handle that?
Yeah, so
I mean, I understand your question.
Well, my question is, let's just say
your scenario. I should say
my scenario is okay. How do we set this up, right? All right,
you understand it, Valley? You explain.
Yes. Okay.
It.
All right. How about this? So. So let's
Valley's
just,
clear. Then,
let's say
you
you're sleeping
him?
With somebody, right?
Okay.
But I don't know it.
Okay.
And then I have an attraction to that person.
Right.
And you just
and we're all in the same
confess,
situation. Like
right.
like somehow we're all like working on a project.
Whatever.
Let's just say.
Okay. Right.
And say, somehow you're so Mike hot. The quick. I'm in. Mike's in 24 hours or 46 hours.
What are you talking about?
You're in. You already were with her, or you are with her. You're having an affair with
He's
her.
He's saying you're sleeping with someone.
Sleeping with her. Yeah.
And he doesn't know it, and he confesses to you, "Hey,
that he likes her.
I think Trisha's kind of hot."
Oh.
And you're already sleeping with her.
You're sleeping with her.
You lie
it's not
to
common
him
knowledge.
And say, and at some point, even if he says to you, "You sleeping with her?" And do you lie? What do you do?
I've been in that situation.
You've been in that situation.
I've been in that situation.
What did you do?
Me too.
I'd have to give you some context to answer
give
that question.
Give me the question. Context. I got
to
hear this.
No, but
please,
I want to. Valley has to answer her own question.
I want to know. Yeah, I want to know
you
all
will,
the guys' context.
When is it okay
so
to lie? I
want
to know what you
tell.
Think.
Well, because I got asked this last week on camera for something, and they said, "When is it okay to lie? Is it okay to lie, and
no.
under what situation?"
Never.
And well. Now check this out. Am I lying though? Chris said no, but I had that situation where the girl came out of the dressing room for me the day before I got asked this question. She was in this dress that was a little too tight for her, just a little bit. But when she said, "Should I get the dress?" I said, "You look beautiful." And she did. The color was good on her.
She did.
The color was good on her. She had She's
yes,
gorgeous.
It was her color.
Gorgeous yeah. face, everything, you know?
If she buffed it a little.
No, but that was the only dress that fit her. She had to go to a wedding in an hour, and so I said, you look beautiful. Was that lying?
How revealing, Valley.
Do you think I was lying by saying that?
No.
Of course you were.
No,
but
when it starts,
you were lying. You thought she was fat.
It depends on what your personal relationship is with the person. What's your scenario, Mike? What's the background? What did you do?
What did I do? Yeah. I mean, but are we just given situations where you lie? Because that's a different question.
When have you lied,
and when did you think it was okay to lie?
I think it's better not to lie.
I was lying by saying you look beautiful.
But I don't think in any situation, I think that, you know what, it's like, okay, you want to know the truth? You can't handle, like, it's that same thing. You can't handle the truth. If you can handle the truth, I'm going to tell you the truth.
What if I say, does this make my butt
you know,
fat?
And once you lay some the truth, then it's better to just, then you've done it. You know, and when somebody lays the truth on you, man.
But what if it's
can you handle it? You become empowered.
But Chris, what if the truth is subjective and it's just your opinion? It's not like someone crossing the finish line in
place. I've had the guy lie to me. I've had the girl lie to me. I've had the lies go into my face that, you know what? I don't even know who the person is anymore, and I don't even know what I have. It's like, what do we have? It's like, well, what are you not lying about? Are you lying about this? You're not lying about
this.
It's like, because I just,
hello.
Let's not go too far off course here.
No, I'm saying is this.
We are talking about significant changes in people's lives. Okay, we stay in focus. Theme, hello, Valley. Okay,
you
calm
want to
yourself.
Start talking about lies, though.
No, she goes, Valley has many her mind works.
I like Val.
We all like Val. But her mind, it races.
Yeah, we know you're here.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes. Hello, sir.
How are you? This is Paul.
Paul.
Hey,
how
Paul.
Are you, so?
Yeah.
How's your life changed, Paul?
Well, you know what? I was thinking how my life did not change in a year. That's what I was trying to think. It's remarkable.
Well, are there any significant ways in which it changed, or is it just status quo?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there was like a couple of like minor little things that happened in this year, but it is remarkable. It seems like the older I get, that the more years I have like that. You know, when
less
I was younger, there were those years that were like,
you need
man,
to hang out
life.
With us.
Exactly. Time is passing you by, sir.
Yes, time is moving, man.
Time is passing you by,
I mean,
sir.
Think of the guy that fell off the roof.
Quick,
said in a
one
second,
quick question,
you know,
sir. Last question. When have you lied and what was going on? And you thought it was okay to lie?
Well, I guess I've lied. Oh, well.
You're lying now.
No, I'm not lying now. Well, I didn't say anything to lie. But, I mean, that kind of, you know, you're talking about, like, lying in relationships. And I guess that's, like, a big thing with me, actually, as I'm sure it is with most of the people in the world. But
hopefully.
You know, like, about, like, whether you lie. Well, do you like that woman, you know? I mean, do you like her or not? You know, and so here's this person that you are committed to. You said you're committed to. Yeah, and somebody comes into your life, and you say, do you, you know, like, and you lie, and you say, no, she's just a friend, or something like that, and
sir, that's such a vague what are you admitting to?
He's been with the woman, someone else comes in, and this other guy likes her, and nobody really knows that they're together, and then the guy says, hey, I like
no,
her.
I think he's saying that the woman is asking him, do you like her, and he says, no, she's just a friend, it's cool, but he may actually have feelings for her, but he doesn't want to stir things up.
Right.
Is that what you said?
Right.
You mean you'd be sleeping with this other girl, and you didn't tell the other girl you want
to
sleep with?
You're making that lie to your girlfriend. Like, I didn't set that up properly. I suppose, you know, you're with a wife.
Oh, you mean, and there's somebody else you're interested in, or you're having sex with?
Somebody else you're interested in. Isn't that the...
Oh, and you lie and say, I'm not interested. That's a very good lie.
Take that down.
That's a good lie.
Take that down a notch, and you're with your girlfriend or you're with your wife, and some gorgeous girl walks in that's a head snapper, and your wife says...
A head snapper.
Do you think she's hot?
Yeah.
Now what do you say?
It depends on your relationship. I don't understand why you can't say,
me either.
You know, it's like, so why am I having to go through my whole life lying like that?
Exactly. I don't see why either.
Good.
Yeah, but it's like I can't really see the situation. But in the situation, I've never actually been able to say that.
It depends on the insecurity, I think, of the particular woman. If I'm with a guy and a hot woman walks in, or a gorgeous model or a gorgeous woman, and he And
you say, go get him, honey.
No, I look too, and I'll say, man, that is a beautiful woman.
No, you do.
Or I'll say, gosh, she's got great legs or whatever, you know? I mean, it's, you know what they
I
say?
Think that's
just
the healthiest thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to be open and talk about it. That doesn't mean you're going to, you know what they say, you can look at the menu or whatever. That doesn't mean you have to go eat it or whatever that saying is.
Right.
something about you. Eating those gorgeous legs, you know, something like that.
Don't hang up on that.
That was beeping.
Oh.
He was beeping. Hello, you're in the air.
Or not.
Hello, you're in the air.
Lukey called.
No, Val. You don't look too fat in that dress. You look beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to eat that menu.
I'm going to eat the menu.
You
say he's going to eat the menu.
Just because you've chosen, made your selection doesn't mean you can't look at the menu.
Exactly.
That's the phrase.
That's it.
I know them
so
all.
What was?
Hello, you're on the air.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. That's right.
It's coming up. Two more days.
Hey. So,
what?
You lie when you're caught.
You lie when you're caught. Wouldn't me?
Yeah, where's Elena?
Hey, that's a good
She's
line. Hey, what's your name? That's good. You lie when you're caught.
Mm. That's a good tagline for the movie.
No, because you know what I heard?
You lie when you're caught.
You I lie. Heard someone say that lie when you're caught. All men that's cheat. Good. Somebody said all men cheat.
The somebody. Men, a lot people. Of somebody
the
said
that. The only men who don't cheat are those who don't have the opportunity. That's what somebody said.
I never heard that part.
That's
like cold as we just hit.
Whatever your subscription to the station, they should pass out a bottle of Prozac, man.
Mm.
People are wild on this station.
I'm out. Thank you, out, man.
All right. Thank you,
Mike, so what is an appropriate scenario to lie? Is there ever a time to lie?
Well,
right?
I mean,
that's something you and I have always experienced.
I think that...
You know,
that
battled with in our lives.
That, you know, I think it is a principle to live to. Mm-hmm. To be honest all the time.
Mm. Like Benjamin Franklin?
Benjamin Franklin. But
no, he made the list with 13 virtues.
Okay. All right. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but yes, I remember.
No, he graphed them out. It's so funny. He's so funny.
Keep going, Micah.
No, all I'm saying is that I think that, you know, you aspire to be honest and as honest as you can be. And as honest, it obviously starts inside. You know, you have to be honest with yourself and you have to be cool with yourself. I mean, there should be nothing going on in your life that you're ashamed of or have to lie about, you know. And when you talk about lies, is the lie of omission? Do you have to tell everybody your business?
That's what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's better to just not say anything.
Please. That's a whole other, in my opinion, that's a whole other, it's not a gray area to me. That's something very specific. I don't consider it lying if I don't tell this person that I do that just because it would be significant to them. You know.
Or that their butt looks fat.
Whatever, exactly.
Because what is more important, the umpteenth degree of honesty or the relationship and the self-esteem of that person?
But what it really, in my opinion, what it really comes down to for most people is self-preservation. They are protecting, they say other people's feelings. In my opinion, that's rarely the case. It's usually you're protecting your own feelings. Like you don't want to deal with whatever the ramifications are of this truth. That's just my opinion.
Yeah,
so there it is.
You're absolutely right.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Question about the any major changes in your life over the year, I haven't had any major changes.
You haven't had any?
No, I haven't. I can't say that. But the question about when is it okay to lie, I think it is an individual choice and it's based on the situation.
Definitely.
So I don't think anyone should just say, oh, well, it's okay to lie in this situation or okay to lie in that situation. It all depends on what the situation is. And,
right.
Maybe kind of going by your intuition, too, like the gentleman that called in and gave us the quote from Einstein about intuition, about, you know, what's the right thing to do in this situation.
Tell us about the 13 virtues. Hello, you're in the air.
I will.
Speak the truth to the masses, no matter how bitter. Trotsky said that.
Thank you.
That's true, though. As far as reporting in the news, that's a whole different thing. But we're kind of, I think, making this.
We do not live in that age.
Wouldn't you say that we're to some degree talking about personal relationships in context of this question?
Well, it's your question. Aren't you talking about?
Yeah, I think we are. I think we're talking about people we care about.
But I know some people that, are so honest that no matter what you ask them, they will. I mean, their honesty and integrity is so incredible. Like, no matter what you ask them, they will tell you the real deal every time.
My response,
and that is incredible. It's so powerful.
But my response,
you say, hey, does you know, what do you think of this tune? What do you think of this cut or this thing or how do I look or whatever it is? And they'll just they'll always tell you the truth. The boiling point.
Thank you.
Listeners, listen up. The Community Advisory Board, or the CAB, is a group of listeners who meet every Sunday to help WBAI. Our station needs actual work done, hands and bodies, at the WBAI office in Brooklyn, New York. Now is the time to move from listening to action. Come and do some work. We need to pack and mail premiums, call listeners to solve premium problems, complete inventorying, and send out BAI buddy packs. Commit to 12 hours a week or whatever you can. You can show up from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. WBAI's heart and soul is the listener. So bring your body, heart, and soul to 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, you can send an email to volunteer@wbai.org.
Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you.